Hello, hello. You're very welcome to If I Were the Minister for Education, a regular podcast where I go into the world of primary education in Ireland and let you what I would do if I were the Minister for Education. This is Simon Lewis. On today's show, Good Grace, the future of primary education in Ireland, Poland bans homework, so should we, and why I'm warming to Norma Foley's smartphone ban. If you are interested in subscribing to the podcast, you can go to any of your podcasting apps and subscribe to If I Were the Minister for Education. You can also find out more from onshaw.net, where you can tune in to the podcast notes, and you can subscribe to the newsletter that I send out every 2 weeks with more views and news and also some ICT tips. I also share some extra bits and pieces on my Feedly account, Irish Education News, which you can search for as well on Feedly, where I scour the internet for stories about the education system in Ireland. So let's get on with it today and go to our first story, which is called Good Grace, and give you a little bit of a background before we get on with things, which started off. The last few weeks in primary school education have been quite interesting if you're interested in patronage and religious control of schools, because for the very first time, after 13 years after its launch, the patronage and pluralism system or project garnered its first Educate Together school to be divested from a Catholic school. This would seem amazing to most people who think there's a huge number of people in Ireland that believe that there's loads of Educate Together schools and they're growing and the Catholic Church are handing over schools to Educate Together ad lib. But actually, the very, very first open Catholic school, so not a disused Catholic school, was handed over by the Catholic Church to Educate Together for the very first time in 2024. As I said, 13 years after the Patronage and Pluralism Forum was launched. Many of you would say, but lots of schools have opened. The real truth is, fewer than 20 schools have transferred over from the Catholic Church to multi-denominational providers. Most of the 20 schools that have transferred over were schools that were closing. They might have had 6 students or 8 students. And most commonly, so some of you might be living in County Kerry, might say, but we've had 4 schools handed over from the Catholic Church in the last 5 or 6 years. Yes, and all 4 of those indeed were handed over by the bishop to the community national school. But all of those schools are very small schools that were probably going to close and aren't exactly what you would call the intentions of divestment, which was to divest, I suppose, mainly in urban areas, big schools or that in from Catholic patronage over to Educate Together or to this community national school. The community national school pretty much has had the monopoly on being paid, divested to. There was one Gael school as well that got divested to Intala. But really, this is a functioning Catholic school that has moved over to Educate Together. And I say this as the backdrop, really, in a way, because there's a lot of perceptions out there about multi-denominational education in Ireland, insofar as that people think there's a lot more of it than there actually is. And I think they may think that, I suppose, maybe because these small bodies have loud voices, there's been a lot of public, pressure to lessen the amount of influence the Catholic Church and other religious bodies have on the patronage system. 96% of primary schools still are under religious control, about 89.7% now to the Catholic Church. And I guess there's been a huge appetite as Ireland as a society becomes less religious. The last census, 2022, only 69% of the entire country even identifies as Catholic, and we have 90% of the schools. And if you even go bed down at the figures a little bit more, if you're aged, I think it was at age 25 to 29 in the last census, which is basically the age these people will be becoming parents now, only 53% of them identify as Catholic. So we're coming into this kind of weird misnomer of a system where, you know, half of the people in the schools no longer identify as the religion of those schools. We're not the country that my mother, and I many like her, I remember my mum saying to me when I was young, that Ireland is a country of 95% Catholics, 5% Protestants, and the rest of us are Jewish. That was her little, one of her little jokes. It's changed now. This country has changed immensely. We have the fastest growing belief system, if we can call it that, is atheism or no religion. And our schools have been very slow to adapt to that. And I guess this has been made even more pointed by study. Just came out last week called the Grace Report. Now, the Grace Report has always been, is from Mary Immaculate College, a very Catholic university in Limerick. It's a teacher training college, a Catholic teacher training college. And every so often they come out with reports which are very good. And this one is no different. They basically surveyed over 4,000, a massive study, 4,000 teachers in Catholic schools. And I remember when this came out, I was puzzled by why they were only surveying Catholic teachers. But I'm very glad they did, because the results of that study were really interesting. And they were, and I guess you can, if you're watching on my screen here, if you're tuned in on YouTube, you'll see that. But if you're not, the Irish Times gives the headline from that Grace Report. Basically, younger teachers in Catholic schools are less likely to believe in God or attend religious services. This study has caused shockwaves, despite it not being shocking news. I think if you worked in an Irish primary school these days, the number of people who would work in Catholic schools and say, oh yes, I'm a practicing Catholic, in their interview, and I'll uphold the ethos and so on. But in reality, in the staff room, many of the teachers absolutely reject a lot of Catholic teaching. There's very few Irish teachers who don't live in sin, in inverted commas, or would have a problem with someone cohabitating. There's very few Irish, like most Irish people in society, that would frown upon someone who is divorced or going through a divorce. There's very few Irish primary school teachers, I would imagine, who would be not using contraception and things like that. And of course, you've plenty of Irish primary school teachers who are gay, and you've got plenty of Irish school teachers who would believe in abortion rights for women. And essentially, I suppose it came as no surprise whatsoever, to me anyway, at least, that at least half of primary school teachers in Ireland do not practice the Catholic faith. And they are teaching children. They're teaching children the Catholic faith, not as a subject, but they're passing on that faith to children. Their job, and I think people forget this. A lot of people, and I think maybe this is all part of it too. I think people forget that if you are a teacher in a Catholic school, your main thing, the main thing that you are supposed to do, that's to permeate throughout the school day, is that you are supposed to pass on the word of God to those children in your care. And I think a lot of Irish primary school teachers even reject that and say, oh, no, we don't do any of that anymore. But the thing is, that's what you're supposed to do. And in some ways, it very much ties in. And I think I've had plenty of arguments over the years with teachers who say, but not the reality on the ground, Simon, is we don't do any of that. Sure, I barely teach religion, or I barely do this. And sure, for goodness sake, that never happens in the staff room and so on. And they're probably, and I suppose they're, and I guess what this leaves us in a situation is you've got expectations from your patron bodies that you will be upholding the ethos, which is passing on the word of God to the children, praying with the children, believing. And I was sent this really good video from a friend of mine by a guy called Robert Nugent, who's a lovely guy, very nice, funnily enough. It's so weird. It was sent to me by someone. And this guy, Robert Nugent, I've met him a couple of times. I was really good friends with his sister in college. And I was actually at the wedding, at my friend's wedding, and that's where I met him last. But he's someone who's really strongly Catholic and really deep in his faith. And this study has really made genuine Catholics very cross, because they believe, you know, that if you are to be a Catholic school, you should be a genuinely Catholic school, and not just some sort of, I know this term is banded about, a bouncy castle Catholic, because it's very disrespectful to genuine Catholics, the way, I suppose, their religion is being treated. In some ways, to use a Bible story, it reminds me, I remember when I was young, I went to a Jewish school and we would have been learning about the Bible. There was this story, and I remember it fairly clearly. It was the golden calf in the Bible. So my memory is a bit hazy, but I think Moses went up to Mount Sinai to meet God, as one does. And when he came down, he saw that the Israelites were worshipping this. They built a golden calf and they were worshipping this golden calf. And I suppose the analogy of that story is that they had taken this their religion and they had essentially made a false idol. And I think in some ways, this is what's happened with Catholicism in schools, that no one is taking it very seriously anymore. And the golden calf essentially are the sacraments that people are essentially sending their kids to Catholic schools. They're outsourcing their religion to schools. So they're asking schools to essentially do the religious parts of a couple of big parties. They like the idea of the communion. They like the idea of the confirmation, but they don't really like the idea of the religion. And it's a very odd thing. They almost made a culture of it. And in fairness, and the Catholic Church have turned a blind eye to this for many years. And rightly, I think, genuine Catholics are very angry at their church leaders for allowing their faith to be essentially desecrated by people who don't care about it. And they're left in this sort of situation where they effectively have a school system that isn't really Catholic, but is Catholic only in name. You have essentially a lot of their missionaries, their teachers, which they're supposed to be missionaries for the Catholic Church, their missionaries are essentially unbelievers, teaching, I suppose, a lot of people who are unbelievers, because again, less than 30% of the population even go to Mass. So you've got unbelievers teaching unbelievers to believe in some way. It just doesn't make sense. And as this guy, Robert Nugent, said, faith is not a subject. I mean, last number of weeks, I've heard people saying, these people should just get on with it. If you're teaching in a Catholic school, you get on with it. You teach the religion, even if you don't believe in it. You should be able to teach the religion, even if you don't believe in it. And I thought that line, faith is not a subject, was really a really clever sentence. And I really liked it. And it sums things up to me. And I think the Catholic Church have a lot of thinking to do. I've spoken to a few friends of mine and a few people online about this who are genuine Catholics, who I call genuine Catholics. They believe in their faith really strongly. And I enjoy these conversations because these are intelligent people who really think about their faith a lot and live their faith every day. And they're angry. They're really, the one thing they have in common, most of them anyway, is they're really angry at their own church in a way, at themselves in some ways, that they've allowed this to happen. But the main thing they all agree on is we have way too many Catholic schools. We've lost our way. We need a space for genuine Catholics to be genuine Catholics and to be unapologetically Catholic. So a lot of the rhetoric right now from these people here is, I don't know this guy, but he wrote a letter in the Irish. This is a guy, Alexander O'Hara, in the Times. He was really angry about these results. And he actually was blaming teachers for not passing on the faith and that we should, that parents would be rightly disgusted. But parents aren't rightly disgusted. The thing is, they're sending their children to Catholic schools not because they believe in the Catholic faith that much. And in fact, the Genesis report was, again, an in-house Catholic survey. Only 9% of parents actually send their children to Catholic primary schools because they're Catholic. And all the other reasons were more important than that. Only 9% because they were genuinely Catholic. So we have a kind of a situation which is, I guess, unsurprising to most people. And it's so unsurprising that I was actually looking at a study from 2012, of 12 years ago, from the Irish Primary Principles Network, when the IPPN were doing really interesting things. One of the things was they were talking about the role of religion in education. Even back then, this is just after the publication of the Forum of Pluralism and Patronage. And what I found really interesting from their study on this was that most people, they surveyed, again, thousands of people, most believed there needed to be less influence of religion in education. Schools should be multi-denominational was the result. However, most people believe sacraments should, most parents, this is a study of parents. So while most parents wanted that there should be multi-denominational schools, they also wanted sacraments to happen in schools. So it was a bit of a paradox, shall we say. And this, and in some ways that gives me the message that parents don't actually, they actually the sacraments, and they want to, but they don't want to put in any of the work to raise their children for those sacraments. And they have, as I said, made a golden calf of the situation. And we'll see this as we move into the month of May, which is even, I'm saying this now, that it's already in Ireland is known as communion season. And what you'll see there is parents stressing, not over religious things, but over being able to get a bouncy castle, getting their house ready, losing weight for the big day and things like that. It's they've turned a religious, very serious sacrament where you're promising a priest that you are continuing your journey through Catholicism. They have turned this into a secular wedding in a way. That, and I don't mean secular in a bad way. There is nothing Catholic about the communion and confirmation anymore. And I see that as a very sad thing for genuine Catholics. As someone with no skin in the game, I can understand why they would be disillusioned. And I wrote an unpublished letter to the Irish Times saying that this is unsurprising. And I think essentially the Irish education system, the Catholic education system, has been built on a foundation of bouncy castles and helium balloons, really, in the last 20 years, really just full of hot air and no substance. And of course, I said then that genuine Catholics must be very deflated. See, I'm good with these puns. I'm a real dad joke here. But I think really it's something to reflect on. I think the future of Irish education, this has really sent shockwaves, though it shouldn't have. It's there in black and white now that teachers under the age of 50, only 41% of them even do the religion once a week in their classroom. That's shocking and wrong. And if you're going to teach in a Catholic school, I just feel you should do it. But if you don't believe in it, how can you? Faith is not a subject. And under just 51%, 49% say they are not committed to practicing Catholics. Half of teachers do not believe in a personal God. It's pretty bad. I think was it 18 or 19% essentially say that they don't go to church except for, you know, big days or whatever it is. So it's pretty bleak if you are leading Catholic churches and that half of your missionaries don't believe in the message. Something's going to have to happen, and it's going to have to happen quickly. This may be good news, weirdly enough, for the government, who are hopelessly doing nothing about the whole thing, because they, when something is hard, do nothing, was, I think, Richard Nixon's mode apparatus. And I think the government were certainly doing that. Or not Richard Nixon, it was Ronald Reagan in the States. And this might push forward their plan to divest 400 schools. I think the whole divestment program is just useless. It doesn't work. We need a better system. I'm putting myself out there to anyone listening, if they are, that I have the solution and I'd love to do it. I think we need it. It starts with a big thinking with the stakeholders. I love to run that because I genuinely think we can get the answer together if we all work together and we really dig deep about our commonalities. I think we can come up with an education system that works for everybody. Anyway, speaking of governments, the Polish government got in the Irish news because they got rid of homework at primary school level. Much like Ireland has done nothing, really. Interestingly, the Polish government do have a say in what happens in their education system, unlike Ireland, where we have a Department of Education who has very little say in what goes on in classrooms. They provide education. They provide for education. They don't provide education in the Department of Education, Ireland. They provide for it. So they give money to private bodies, such as the Catholic Church, to provide education. And they don't really have a say on homework, and they never, ever give a comment on it. But essentially, this is a very long article by Liam Nolan about Poland, the Polish government getting rid of homework. It didn't actually lead to much discussion. I really, really thought I'd be on every radio station talking about this. But I think in some ways, the topic of homework has been done to death in Ireland. And in some ways, there's a sort of a general agreement amongst most people that you either want it very much or you don't want it very much. So it's very polarised. So you have the likes of the journalist Jen Hogan campaigning from a parent point of view, saying she hates homework and she wants it banned because she's very busy. And then you've got other parents who are saying, no, we need homework because we don't know what's going on in schools and they could be doing anything in there kind of stuff. And we want to know what's going on, and all flavors in between, really. I've been going on a journey with homework for many years. I did a podcast about it, I think 5 years ago, where I concluded, still where I am at the moment, that I don't see the point of traditional homework in Irish primary schools. We need to reimagine homework for the 21st century, and whether we should have, number one, whether we should have it at all, or if we are to have homework, what does it look like? And I've always, I suppose I came to the conclusion, very much from a good study there a number of years ago about homework, if we're to have homework, you should have, it should involve choice, it should be personalised. And when I say choice, by the way, the choice to do it or not do it, choice around the topic of what it is, and make sure it's of interest. If it's it can't be just, it needs to be thoughtful, it needs to be meaningful, and so on. So there's a lot of questions around homework that need to be answered, and we still haven't really had a proper discussion about it. And again, similarly to religion in schools, I think when it comes to homework in Irish schools, we need to re-examine properly what it looks like. We need to talk about it. We need to look at the studies that are there, bring people together and decide, what does homework look like in Ireland in the 21st century? Should it be project-based if we have it? Should we have it at all? There's all these, I suppose there's all these big questions. In Poland, if people are interested, the news of it essentially being decreed by the Polish government has been met, unsurprisingly, with people being very happy and people being very sad about it. They've interviewed parents, they interviewed children, they interviewed teachers from both sides of the equation. And predictably, as I said, both sides are represented. But I would think, not very much deep thinking about it. It's the same sort of arguments you'll hear in Ireland from most people. Ah, it's good to practice what you do in school, or it's a waste of time. Children should be out playing. They're not very deep thoughts about homework. We have to really think more deeply about what the benefit is and what does homework mean anymore? And has the word become so poisonous that we need to change it to something else that accurately reflects what it is? Children essentially assessing themselves, is there something I need to practice that I didn't get in school? So the teacher might say, let's just pick a very simple example, because I want to go more through the thought process rather than the actual content of the homework. So your times tables being, let's pick something controversial. Okay, a teacher, let's say, and I'm not saying this is good or anything like that, but let's say the teacher is teaching the five times tables and you're a child in that class who goes, yeah, got it. And there's no point in you being given a sheet of 100 five times tables on a sheet of paper that you have to fill out, because you're not learning anything new because you've got it. Equally, there's no point in you going home and practicing them because you've got it. However, if you're a child who's just struggling a little bit, you've got some of them, you've got the easy ones, let's say the easy ones in inverted commas, but there's a few that you don't know, then is it a good idea for you to practice them at home? And I would suggest it probably is, because it is something you will need to know in life. It is handy to know your multiplication facts. And if you haven't got them, it would make sense to me that you might practice them at home. And you can do that in lots and lots of different ways. And I'm just saying, these things aren't black and white. Individual kids need to assess where they're at in a particular thing and then do it. Let's pick a different example. Let's say a project on the Vikings, because everyone does projects on Vikings. How are you going to present that project? Okay, some might say, do you know what? I don't fancy doing that project, and that should be fine. Some of them might be going, do you know, I've always wondered what food Vikings eat. Go off and find out. Another kid might be going, do you know what I really like to do? I'd love to build a longboat, or I'd like to make a shield, or I'd like to make a helmet. That's the kind of stuff I think we should be looking at when we're talking about homework. We need to give choice, we need to make it meaningful, and we need to make sure that people are working at their own level. What will make this useful? I would love, for example, the one who's making his helmet might be showing off his or her skills in design, and or what made the helmet, was it a good design for a helmet? And was that the helmet at all? I think we all could picture a Viking helmet in our heads there, but was that what it actually looked like? There's a question that you might do for your homework. I don't know. I might do it for my homework. I'm curious now that I'm saying it. There's lots and lots to talk about homework. I think it's an interesting topic. I think we need to think more deeply about these things. And maybe I'm coming up with a theme here because I've been thinking a little bit more deeply about smartphones and their use for young people. Now, I haven't changed my mind in that I think it's ridiculous for a child to own a smartphone. It's dangerous. I've compared it to giving a child a gun, essentially. Once you give a child a smartphone for themselves, you are essentially taking away their innocence and you are giving them access to things they should not have. I haven't changed my mind on that. What I was most annoyed about was the Minister for Education, Norma Foley, essentially asking schools to manage this this whole situation. And if you remember from, it's always in, I've been doing this, my newsletter for, I think I'm on the 10th newsletter, and I'd say 8 out of 10 of them have mentioned Norma Foley's, who's the Minister for Education, crusade against smartphone use. And up until now, it's really, she's been weak, I feel. Basically, these social contracts with parents signing these social contracts with their schools and getting schools to ban smartphones in schools. There's not a single school in the country, I don't think, that was allowing the use of smartphones during the school day. And I was disappointed by that. And I was critical of her for really doing nothing particularly useful. My argument really was that there's no point in getting schools to do these things. You need to be stronger and you need to be talking to parents. You need to be talking to the people who make the smartphones or sell smartphones. You need to be talking to the social media companies where a lot of this dangerous stuff is happening, where, for example, on TikTok or Snapchat or any of the other ones, it's not just designed to those, but TikTok and Snapchat are the two of the more popular apps for children, that if the algorithm there is essentially, go back to an article there, it's this one, that particularly teenage boys are being bombarded. So if TikTok knows or YouTube knows that you are a teenage boy, you within minutes are getting misogynistic and violent content on your phone. You're getting stuff which is just not okay. And that influences young males to believe those messages, these violent messages, alpha male messages, these toxic sort of anti-feminist messages and real extreme messages, pornography, all this sort of stuff. And that doesn't happen by accident. And there's a guy, and I haven't got it here on my screen, but there's a guy who's involved, and I don't know his organization. I actually used to play tennis with him when I was a kid. His name is Johnny Ryan. And I think he wrote a book years and years ago. And I was like, oh, I played tennis with that guy. But he's become very big in the idea of, I think, internet security and things like that. Well-respected personality in terms of technology. There was a program and he said that these algorithms could be switched off tomorrow, where you are fed this information depending on your age and your gender and all the rest of it. Girls, I suppose it goes into the article, I don't know, girls are being bombarded with self-harming videos and things like that. It's really gross when you think of it, like really, and really worrying. And I suppose, so nobody knows, none of this is surprising and none of this, you know, should be surprising to anybody. Yet, parents are still buying their children smartphones and children are allowing their kids to access content that is amazing. Like there's, I think that in the UK, something like 30% or 30 to 40% of children aged 5 to 7 have their own social media accounts on things like Snapchat, TikTok. That's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. And because they're under 13, they have to pretend they're 13. So they're getting this misogynistic. They're getting this aggressive. They're getting this sexualized content to their phones, to 5 to 7 year olds. So going back to Norma Foley, I guess I'm saying I'm warming to her crusade is because she is starting to move away from asking schools to deal with it. And she is putting it up to the companies. What I would suggest is the next step for the minister and her government partners really is to start putting in laws, start paving the way for laws that someone under 18 shouldn't be allowed to have alcohol on their person or shouldn't have a cigarette on their person. They shouldn't have a smartphone on their person. And if they are, the responsibility lies with the person who sold that item to the child or to the adult who has bought it for the child. That's where we need to move to. I just can't. There's a lot of things I don't understand. And in my day, the big thing was the parents buying 18 videos for their young children to watch in their house. This is worse. This is absolutely worse. This is basically buying your child a gun, effectively. It's so dangerous. And to not have the parental controls, even. Oh, it is exacerbating. So I am warming to the idea. But why I'm warming to it isn't educational in a way. I'm warming to it because I suppose the minister is moving away from getting schools to deal with the problem to actually putting in the laws and to actually do something about it. So look, they are my three stories for today. The Good Grace report, which I think has sent shockwaves to genuine Catholics, and rightly, and hopefully this will spark some change. I've got loads of other stories relating to the role of religion in education in the newsletter, which you can sign up to by going to onshaw.net/subscribe. And I've also obviously a podcast there on homework, which is a good number of years old at this stage, but still relevant, I think. And the smartphone ban, really, I suppose we're going to have to think of a little, I suppose I'm going to think more on that and maybe publish a few articles on why I'm warming to the idea of a ban. Look, if you've enjoyed this episode, please do subscribe on your favorite podcasting app, whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts, I think it's called, or any of the other podcasting things. I use Snipped recently. I've moved from Castbox to Snipped, which I quite like for listening to my own podcast, to listening to podcasts around the country. All the show notes from this podcast will be available on onshaw.net right now. If you're there on onshaw.net, go ahead and get to it. And as I said, if you are listening or watching this on YouTube, please give a review because it helps other people to find it. And please recommend it to your friends and family. And that's it for me. Thanks so much for listening. All the very best. Take care. Bye-bye.